Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying, you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaken, but I gotta keep trying. Gotta keep my head held high. There's always gonna be another mountain. I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle. Sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. Ain't about how fast I get there. Ain't about what's waiting on the other side. It's a climb.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive. That was Miley Cyrus singing The Climb. And if you listen closely to the words to that song, you'll see why we played that. It is about the journey, the spiritual journey, and to greater understanding. My guest today on Alive to Thrive is Donna Visaki from Colorado. I'm so excited to have Donna on Alive to Thrive. I'm trying to remember when we first met. I feel like it was several years ago. I actually feel like we may have even met in Colorado when I lived there through 2004. Donna has started a magazine called Bella Spark and also does Bella Spark Productions and has brought many, many visionary speakers, authors to audiences in Seattle, Vancouver, and Colorado. And we actually just ran into each other recently at the Afterlife Conference. Alive to Thrive was one of the sponsors, and Donna was one of the speakers. So welcome to Alive to Thrive, Donna. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Brenda. It's delightful to be here today.
Well, I got to tell you, I just finished the last page of the book this morning, your book called I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain, which you so kindly gifted me a copy when we saw each other, was very gripping, and there were very many passages that they were the exact words that I had been thinking and feeling after losing my mother in a car crash in 1996, and having been with her in that car when that happened. So many things that I never articulated out loud or had the courage to articulate out loud, you put down on paper, those feelings of such overwhelming loss and yet wanting to connect to your loved one and thinking about stepping out in the middle of traffic, you know, thinking about ending your life so that you could be with your daughter. I mean, I had thought those thoughts, and I never wanted to articulate that. So for those of our listeners who don't know your story, help us get back to that time period when you lost your beautiful daughter.
My daughter, Christy, was 21 years old, and she was killed in a car accident. She was a beautiful, you know, outspoken young woman and everything. And the beginning of my book is very raw. Because it is all of those emotions that you feel, you know, when you lose someone you love. And You know, you're in denial, you're angry, you're so desperate to, you know, connect with your daughter, to be with your child, to be with your loved one, that, you know, you'll do almost anything. You don't want to be around people. I mean, it was hard to write, but it also was something that I needed to do, you know, to just articulate all of those feelings and those emotions that people have, you know, when they do lose someone they love.
Well, and I think telling your story, just, I know that whenever I've shared about my story, it gives other people permission to share about their loss. And one of the things we do at our store at Butterfly and Moon here in Missouri is, you know, we talk with our customers about death and life after death. And so many of our customers have lost someone significantly. But what do you understand differently now about death compared to what you understood when your daughter died suddenly?
Well, I understand now that life goes on, you know, and that my daughter, her spirit, her soul lives on, and that we are able to connect with them. Shortly after Christy died, I went to a Compassionate Friends meeting for parents who've lost children, and I did not want to go because I did not want to admit that I was part of this club, you know, the Mothers mm-hmm. of Dead Kids Club. But I ended up going, and it changed my life. It wasn't the fact that there were all these people who understood how I felt. It was one woman who came up to me afterwards, and she said, "Your daughter was standing behind you all night long, and she's a beautiful girl." And she hands me her card, and it said, "Angel Reader." She was actually there as a mother. She had lost her son. But she could see Christy, she could talk to her, and I'm looking at this card and going, I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything about dead people or what happens when we die or mediums. All I knew was like 1-800 psychic or whatever. And it took me like a month to get up the courage to go see her. But when I did, I was able to connect with my daughter. And, you know, you kind of go like, well, how do I know this is Christy? But she, you know, confirmed things and told me things that she wouldn't know. The fact that Christy had a dolphin tattoo on her shoulder and things like that, that there's no way she would know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just, it was the most amazing thing. And to be able to hear, you know, that she's okay and she's with me and all of mm-hmm. those kinds of messages, it changed my life, and it set me on a new path.
Mm-hmm. And so how can others connect with their loved ones outside of, do you recommend seeing someone who is a, you know, medium? I know Suzanne Giesman does wonderful sessions as an evidentiary medium, and I've had her on the show, and she actually did a session for me in this a year ago that really revealed a lot, actually, almost revealed about the store, and I had no clue I was going to be opening a store, mm-hmm. but that there was something creative and collaborative coming around the corner, and that my mother and sister, I also lost my sister suddenly a few years ago, that I could totally identify with you in your book about losing your sister too. But how can others connect with their loved ones? What are some ways?
Well, I think we all have this ability. You know, again, when you're first starting out, it's kind of nice to go see somebody, and there are lots of really amazing, reliable, you know, mediums out there, and you know, they can help you connect in that. But I started reading all the How to Talk to Dead People books by Sylvia Brown and James Von Prague and other people about how to tune in. And I know there's classes and things that you can do, because I think basically it's just learning how to quiet the mind and, you know, learning that ability to tap into them. And they send us signs and stuff all the time. Butterflies, pennies, they manipulate anything electronic, lights, televisions, radio,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that.
Sure.
So when you get signs, or all of a sudden a certain song comes on the radio that you know your a loved one, you know, loved, or sometimes it smells, you know, you can smell like your father's cigarettes or your mother's perfume or, you know, they're always there, and we discount the signs. You know, our first thought is, ooh, that smells like grandma, you know, and then we go, nah, you know, I'm making that up. And it's just learning to be open to the signs and the messages that we're getting. That's a first start. They also come to you in your dreams, because when we're asleep, our defenses are down. And so a lot of times they'll show up in your dreams, and that's their way of letting you know that they're around and they're okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I know 3 weeks after my mother died, I was afraid I would forget what she sounded like or looked like, and I took a little afternoon nap. I was on a couch because I had a broken leg. I couldn't really get off the couch for several weeks, but she came to me, and she was at the foot of my stairs and kind of motioned to me to come to her for a hug, and I motioned back that I was on the couch and couldn't really get off the couch, and she just smiled so peacefully and crossed her arms over her chest, and I was just filled with this incredible sense of peace. And I shared that story with, right after I woke up from this dream, this friend of mine, a musician, called me to, he was writing a song for me called The Name of Your Angel, and his name's Steve Gelman, I told him about the dream. He had a writer's block, couldn't finish the song, and then that helped him finish the song, which he went on to record on a CD, but very much like what you said about seeing signs, being open to the different things. You know, butterflies were definitely a sign that I would always see of my mother, and thus, you know, why we came up with the name Butterfly and Moon for our shop. But
oh,
different signs and electronics. I mean, there have been so many things after my father-in-law, who was living with us, passed. I mean, lights were coming on and off, the television down in his area, he had a basement apartment in our house, the TV would just come on. I mean, it's so true, and people need to embrace it instead of be afraid of that, but that those are comforting to me, you know.
Yes.
It doesn't still happen 5 years later, but it did happen for a little while, a few weeks, you know, after he had died. I think just sort of checking in, saying hi, you know, that he was still with us, and now, you talk about all of our experiences on Earth being like a giant Earth school, and that, you know, we're all on the spiritual journey, and everything we're doing is unfolding for our greater awareness and our greater consciousness. But talk about the Earth school, and how can you elaborate on what that is?
Well, we choose things. I think one of the most eye-opening books for me was by Robert Schwartz. He wrote a book called Your Soul's Plan. And he asked the question, so, you know, if some tragic event happens to you, was that supposed to happen? Was it just random, you know, bad karma, bad fate, whatever? And so he worked with a medium, and he took people back to their life between lives, because, you know, we've been here multiple times, and we chart out our lives. We pick our parents, we pick our children, we pick the things we want to do. We pick our sex, so we're going to be male, female, whatever, and we pick the lessons we want to learn. Sylvia Brown alluded to this in one of her books that I had read, that whenever she talked to these souls, these dead people on the other side, that they all had like this common theme. There were like 12 themes. It might be money. It might be relationships. It might be anger. It might be loss, grief and loss, or something that they wanted to, one of the main themes of their lessons that they wanted to learn. And so we chart out our lives so that we may learn those lessons, and we pick the experiences that we, you know, want to have in order to grow. So it's a fascinating story. He did a young man, 30-some years old, dove into a swimming pool. He had a wife, two little kids. He dives into a swimming pool, and he hits his neck or head, and he's paralyzed. So again, was that supposed to happen? And it turns out he wanted it to happen because he, I don't remember what the lesson was or why he wanted to experience this, but in fact, he wanted it to happen when he was a child. But the soul that was going to be his mother said, nah, I don't know if I want to do that. And so he agreed that it would happen later when he was an adult, and the soul that was said she'd be his wife. Okay, I'm in, and his kids were in, and everything. And it was chapter after chapter after chapter. And one of the things that Christy said to me in the very first reading with that angel reader that I had, she said, we agreed to do this. And it had more to do with my soul's evolution than Christy's. And she also said that I had left her in other lifetimes, you know, before. But I'm going, what the hell was I thinking? You know, why would I agree to something like that? But, you know, I can see now, it's been 13 years since my daughter died, how it changed the trajectory of my life and it put me on a different path. Mm-hmm. And the things that I've learned and experienced and that I know now and who I am now, I know that never would have come to pass if I had, you know, if Christy hadn't left, if I hadn't had this experience.
Yeah,
and that's
I totally
why we're
feel that
here.
Way.
We're here to grow and evolve our soul. And so we put together these experiences. So this is Earth School. And then we have all these people come in to give us the opportunity to learn that experience.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I know with losing my mother, it was like she almost gave her life so I may live, because I was mm-hmm. in D.C. living in the fast lane, like literally and figuratively. And even though a car jumped the median strip and hit us head on, I was in the fast lane and I was not paying attention to her the morning of the day before. I mean, she was giving out all kinds of signs and symbols and messages that she knew beyond a doubt that her time was coming to an end. And she talked about it. I mean, she talked about angels. She told me to have my angel get a message to her angel if I ever needed to communicate to her. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like, that's going to be a long time. You know, I thought we were doing a road trip game. We were driving from New Hampshire to Maryland, and, you know, she talked about heaven, and she couldn't wait to get there.
Gosh.
Like, it was some kind of party
gosh.
In the sky that she was late for. And, I mean, there was all these things. And it was just the very last thing she gave me. I had forgotten my watch when we left the house. You know, here I was telling her not to be late because I had a very important meeting with a client at Georgetown University. And, you know, I was the one that made us late, and I forgot my watch, ironically. And she gave me her watch, and after I got out of the hospital and they give you the little bag of your jewelry and this watch was in there, I said, this isn't my cheap Timex. I was such a snob, and this isn't my watch. And then it hit me, oh my gosh, it's my mother's watch. And that was the last thing she gave me. And for the longest time, I interpreted it as she gave me the gift of time, not to waste it, not to overlook it, not to take life for granted. And that was my interpretation of that story for a very long time, until I heard Eckhart Tolle talk about man's attachment to time is the only thing that separates us from conscious contact with God, is our attachment to time. And then it hit me that it was her letting go of time. Like, she took off that watch, and then boom, like 2 minutes later, she's dead. You know, so it was really profound understanding it that switched. But, you know, so anyway, and you said about the trajectory of your life changed. So let's talk about that. You started Bella Spark Productions, inspired by your daughter's spark and her beauty, and Bella means beautiful. Tell us about the thought process that went into creating Bella Spark Productions.
Well, I started searching for answers. You know, why did this happen to me? Where's Christy? What happens when we die? All of those questions that you have. And so, you know, I'm scouring Barnes & Noble and the bookstores looking for all these books and everything and reading. Like I said, first it was How to Talk to Dead People books, and then it's How to Talk to Your Angels, and then Conversations with God jumped off the shelf at me. And so, you know, I'm just on this journey of searching, and it was like, well, I want to hear these people. I want to see these people in person. And I live in Fort Collins, Colorado. We're about an hour north of Denver. But nobody ever came to Colorado. We never saw any of these speakers. And I was the executive director of the symphony at the time, and I'd always done events and stuff. And I thought, well, I'm just going to bring somebody in. So I got Sonia Choquette to come in, and we did a live event. We had 500 people there. And it told me that other people were searching for answers, too. So then I started doing events and bringing in all of these speakers. You know, I've worked with Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and Don Miguel Ruiz and Carolyn Mays and Michael Beckwith and, you know, amazing, amazing people in that. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to hear them. And that, so I just started. It took me about I did that for about 2 years still with my job. And then finally I quit my day job.
Oh my gosh.
Went into
I can't believe you lasted that long. 2 years of doing both. That's like insane. But I don't know how you did that.
Yeah. But I just, it took me a while to get up the courage to, let go of all attachments. Mm-hmm. And I had an empty credit card back when you could have a high limit, and started my business. And then somewhere along the way, I bought a magazine, and which I recently sold. I just sold that a couple months ago, and that feels really, really good to have passed that on to somebody else. But yeah, and then it just expanded.
And once you sold the magazine, that freed up some time for you to be able to write the book, I suppose.
Well, no, I wrote the book before I sold the magazine.
Well,
I wrote the book, a little while before that. It was about at the 10-year mark that I started writing the book. In fact, my guide, so, it's been a fascinating journey, and I've experienced lots of different things, and I have been able to connect with my daughter. And my sister passed away, and so I'm able to connect with my loved ones and my guides and my angels. And so, when I get messages and things like that, and my guide says, you need to write these down, you need to write these stories down, you need to tell this story because you're going to forget them. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to read your book to remember it. And I'm going, how can I forget this? I will never forget this information. Because this is such an important part of my life, all of this stuff that I experienced and everything that happened to me, and I'm going, I will never forget this. They said, you need to write it down. So then I started writing my book, and it would come into me in weird places, and I'm out running, or walking, and I get messages or in the middle of the night. And stuff
so
like
did
that.
You get up and keep, did you keep a journal by your bed and...
I had a tablet by my bed, and I would write things down when they came in. My girlfriend got me a little pen, and the tip of it where you write the ink is, it has a light on it.
Oh, because
so
a lighted pen.
Actually,
that's
see
cool.
A lighted pen so you can see in the dark.
I noticed that within your book you had a lot of great detail, and so I was wondering if some of this detail came from a daily journal because it was so accurate, and it was reporting on how this whole process unfolded. And so did you do daily journal writing and then take the writing and transfer
it
to the computer?
I didn't do daily journal writing, but I did write, off and on over the years, the last few years. And I still do, I get inspired and then I'll write things down. And so I did, I did write some of my experiences down, and then others, it was just kind of came to me as I'm pulling the book together. It was like, you need to tell this story or you need to tell that story and everything. But I do write a lot. And when I meditate, I write and I get a lot of, information that way.
I couldn't believe some of the similarities because I used to work for the Colorado Symphony in Denver, and I had a background in event planning too. And I do believe that my radio show is much like your Bella Spark Productions, where I just am fascinated by all these different authors, and I love interviewing them and talking with them, and I selfishly, you know, have said, I don't care if anyone's listening or not. I love the interviews I'm doing, but I know we're touching lives around the country and around the world. And sometimes it's in the after the airing, the podcasts that are listened to more sometimes than the live. Now, you host your own radio show. Tell us about that. Interviews, I love that, with Kimmy Rose on Tuesday nights, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, on themixtalk.com, if people want to find that. Tell us about your radio program.
Well, it started, I've been working, Kimmy is a person who came into my life about a year or so after Christy died, and she's always had a radio show, and somewhere along the way she invited me to be a part of it, and it took me a while, you know, to kind of jump into that space in that, and so we've been doing it for the last 3-4 years. We took a little break last year. We were on CBS, and we lost our they changed their format, so we lost our space, and that's so we took a little break, but now we're back, and it is wonderful. One of the things that I and one of the chapters in my book is called "It Was All About Me," and you know, I started doing these events and everything, and then it was amazing the people that would be there and people that you didn't think would be interested in this stuff, and you realize how putting on these events and the magazine and the articles and the things that you do and these different speakers and everything and how it touches people and it shifts people and everything. So, you know, you think you're doing this wonderful, amazing thing for, you know, the greater good, which in some ways you are. But when I got, you know, as I'm writing my book and that, I realized it was all about me. It was all about my journey. And everybody that I worked with, it was something that I needed to learn. You know, there was some piece in there that was for me. It wasn't about just bringing, you know, Deepak Chopra to Fort Collins. It was about my piece of what his message was and what I needed to learn from Deepak Chopra and everything. So it was my journey was walking through all of this stuff on all of these things that I'd done and everything. My book is called I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain. And this is where Kimmy, the very first time I met her, it was at a conference or something, and she was one of the speakers there. She's a medium. And we just talked, and we hit it off. And she went back. She's in outside of Toledo, Ohio, and I came back to Fort Collins. And she sends me an email, and she says, Donna, I got a message from Christy. She said she'll meet you at the base of the mountain. And then she goes on to describe this big, lush, green mountain and this rock formation and this river. And I said, Kimmy, I don't know where that is. And then I saw her like 2 years later, a year later, she came to Fort Collins and she was doing gallery readings and I'm there in the audience and she called on me and she said, Christy's here and she has a message for you. She says she'll meet you at the base of the mountain and she gives me the exact same message. And I said, Kimmy, you gave me that a year ago and I still don't know where the mountain is. And I feel like that whole journey, I was searching for Christy, searching for that mountain everywhere I went. I mean, I live in Colorado, every mountain here, or I was in Maui, and I was in Vancouver and Seattle, and all these, I thought I was supposed to go to Machu Picchu, maybe that's the mountain. I'm searching and searching for this mountain and searching for Christy. And so everything that I've done and everything, it was my journey. And I love this quote. I have it taped on my wall. It says, it's not the end of the journey which teaches, but the journey itself, by Joseph Campbell. And so, you know, and when you look back on your life, I had a friend who passed away from cancer a while back. And she said, when I look back on my life, as she was getting close to the end, she knew she was dying. She said, as I look back on my life, I see the hand of God in everything I did, every twist and turn. And you can see, you know, in hindsight, all of the things that shaped your life. and good, bad, you know, beautiful, wonderful, whatever.
You see the patterns. And, I mean, it also reminded me, there was a book I read a few years ago called On Hind's Feet, On High Places, and it's the analogy of the path and the metaphor of meeting the Christ within by climbing the mountain and overcoming struggles and trusting in a higher power. Did you ever read that book? Are you familiar with that book?
I have not, no.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
what's it called? I'll have to write that down.
Yeah, On Hind's Feet, On High Places. And a friend of mine gave it to me as a paperback a few years ago. I thought it was a newer book, and when I looked it up today, I was surprised to see that it was written in 1955. And
oh,
you will totally love it because the lead character is, you know, much afraid and is looking around, you know, is in the valley. And it's this whole journey of, you know, climbing the mountain and the path and overcoming the struggles, but just trusting that you are protected and guided. And I like to say, too, like, I wrote a little chapter in an anthology called The Seven Points of Impact, and my chapter was called Help is on the Way, and that in life when you're on your path and you come to a fork in the road and you don't know which path to take, that there will be a guide, there will be someone there that's been down that path before that will point you in the right direction. You know, it's almost like when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And
mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these books, I mean, I worked in a metaphysical bookstore in 1988, perhaps it was, 1987. It was a part-time job in Georgetown. After I had my day job, I went over to this. It was one of the first metaphysical bookstores in the country. It was called Yes. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Yes Bookstore in Washington, D.C. And there were all these books, Marianne Williams, all, you know, Wayne Dyer, all this stuff. And at that point, I wasn't ready to absorb the information, and I knew it would challenge all of the traditional religious teachings I had been raised with as a Catholic. And, you know, I was really curious, and I wanted to be around these books, and I wanted to be around the people reading those books, but I didn't read them. And I remember picking up like Course in Miracles, and I didn't even read. I moved that book across the country from D.C. to Colorado, you know, and it was really, I did an event with Marianne Williamson in 1997. I had produced one of her early lectures, and, you know, it was her books that kind of started opening my mind.
Right.
And so, you know, it was interesting because all that happened. It was starting to happen just a little bit before the car crash, which was the end of 96. So it's 20 years this year for me.
Mm.
And, you know, and I've started doing some writing. But I think, you know, reading your book and talking to you, it's just I'm getting all these messages that now's the time to start writing. Like, I have to do this. And for my own sanity and for, you know, future generations, my mother had like 40 grandchildren. You know, none of them know those stories. They don't know about their aunt, you know. And I love the stories, the touching stories you wrote about Mooney. Tell us a little bit more about Mooney and how she communicates with you and the lessons that she passed on to you, your sister.
My sister, Mooney, her name was Mary, but we called her Mooney. And she was a special, you know, a special person, too. She never married, and she never had any children of her own. So she was, you know, a great aunt to my children and wonderful with my grandchildren as well. And she had an aneurysm and went into a coma and was in a coma for 10 days or 2 weeks. And so I was with her. You know, the entire time I stayed with her at the hospital and everything. And it was a totally different experience, you know, knowing that, you know, that she was at a choice point and knowing that she could go home or she could choose to stay. And it was interesting. I'd be staying there in the middle of the night in the hospital, and it's just me in the room with her. And the and I knew, you know, there were other, I could feel other energies around us in that, but I don't typically see things and that. I feel energies more than I see them, and I hear things and that. But every once in a while, like the paper towel machine would spit out, you know, paper towels kind of, you know, just out of the blue. Nobody's in the room. There's nothing happening.
Yeah.
And I would read to her in the middle of the night. And I remember the night she died, I was dozing on this little sofa next to her. And I heard this voice, Donna. And I, you know, kind of jump awake, you know, and she takes her last breath and she left. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, she talks to me. She sometimes I'll write and she's like channeling through me. My grandchildren are most connected. They're amazing. And children are wonderful. And we need to cultivate.
Encourage them.
Because they come in with this ability to see. And, you know, those imaginary friends that little kids talk about, they're probably not really imaginary, that they're, you know, there's some loved one or angel or whatever. And my granddaughter was 8 when Mooney died. And she and Mooney were buddies and everything. And about a couple weeks after she died, I was babysitting my granddaughter, and I slept overnight, and I slept with her in bed with her, and we wake up Sunday morning, and she says, Nana, do you want to play I Spy? And you know, I Spy with my little eye that kids gave me play, and I said, sure, and she said, Mooney plays I Spy with me all the time. I said, well, when did you see Mooney? She said, she sleeps with me every night.
Hmm.
And she sees Mooney, and, you know, and it's like looking at you or me. That's how clear
yeah.
it is for her. And Christy also sleeps with her. And then a while back, Hampton's cat died. And now the cat's in bed with them.
Oh, my goodness.
Bed's getting pretty full. But she's
wow.
never alone. And she sees them more now than she did when she was alive. And that's the thing that I think we all have to know. We've lost that. Most of us older people, you know, it's been drilled out of us, you know, years and years ago. And but our loved ones are around us all the time. They're there. They're just like in a different dimension that we can't quite see.
So you mentioned briefly in your book about the indigo and crystal children that are here to help us evolve to a higher vibration. So do you believe some of your grandchildren are indigo or crystal children?
Christy was a definite indigo. If you look at the description of indigo children, they're very outspoken. They're very frustrated with the way we operate and the way people are and the way they treat each other and things like that. And they're always pushing the envelope and they're a little angry and everything. And Christy was a classic indigo and that kind of age group in the 80s and forward. Those were kind of classified as indigo children. And then the crystal children came in after them, and they're so sensitive and more attuned, and they have these abilities. It's not so hard for them to connect, or to connect to their higher self, to connect with their guides and angels or loved ones, or to tune into those higher frequencies and everything. And they're here to show us the way of looking at the world in a broader perspective than that. And then I read somewhere that all the babies born after the shift on 2012,
uh-huh.
December 21st, 2012, they come in without the veils. So they can see those babies. You know, those kids are like 4 years old now. It'll be interesting to see, but they have the ability to see beyond the veils. So, so each generation of children, they're more attuned to this because it's like we've been asleep that we're not aware. One of my favorite books was The Giver, and they came out with a movie about a year ago with Jeff
yeah.
Bridges.
Yeah.
And it's about this colony of people, and they live in this, everything's the same. In fact, everything's in black and gray and white. Everything's in gray, shades of grays. And people, you know, they have their set jobs, and everybody gets one wife, you know, one husband. They get two kids. Everybody gets a bike when they're 10. You know, everything's the same, and it's very peaceful in that, but everything's just kind of the same. And there's one man, Jeff Bridges, he is the holder of all of the memories of what was before. And this young kid, and then when they get to be a certain age, like 17 or 18 or whatever, everybody gets chosen for their jobs. So some people go into this arena, some people are, you know, healthcare people, everybody gets chosen for their job, and this one boy gets chosen to be the receiver. So Jeff Bridges is getting old, so he has to download all of these memories to this young man. And so these are things, what it was like, where people had families. He also sees the bad things, war and pain and suffering and everything. And he starts to see things that apples are red, you know, or green, not everything in gray in that. And it's like we're all living in this space of what we think the world is or what we think the universe is, and there's this whole other place just out of our vision where,
wow,
you know, different dimensions and things happening, you know, all the time, but we're not part of them. Some people, if you get into the woo-woo stuff, they say, like, you know, like Bigfoot lives in another dimension that's very close to ours, and then he kind of pops in and out of ours, and that's when people have sightings. I don't know, but
yeah,
possible.
So, Donna, if you could reincarnate as an animal, which animal would you pick and to embody, and why?
I always say that I'd come back as a giraffe because I'm tired of being short. But I don't.
I see the giraffe. There is a book by Bill Donius, and he was a chairman of a bank here in St. Louis, and he wrote a book about writing with your left hand to connect to your creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And the first question in this activity is, you know, what animal would you be? And you write it with your right hand, then you do it with your left hand. And he's at William, I think it's WilliamDonius.com, and you can. It's called Thought Revolution: How to Unlock Your Inner Genius. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
it's very interesting. And you know, when you said giraffe, the first image that came to my mind is, you know, I just remember seeing a giraffe at the zoo with its offspring, and the offspring stayed very close to its mother. And you know, you don't think of these large creatures having such maternal, I don't know, to see like this maternal thing in the wild is very interesting. So I think that is a perfect animal for you.
I would choose a lioness, a mother lion, I think, because she's very powerful, and protective. Yeah, I don't know.
So, do you think you'll ever make a movie or a documentary about your spiritual journey?
I don't know.
Well, maybe
I
it's out there.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
fascinating.
I mean,
and then the journey keeps going. You know, I mean, you're never done. And then it takes different twists.
Yeah. So I mean, you've achieved so many of the goals you've set out for yourself, and you do present on various topics. One being live your dreams. Is there anything left you haven't yet done that's on your bucket list that you want to accomplish?
I want to do more speaking and that, and maybe do television. I really feel like I have a message to share, and it took me a while. I mean, because I was behind the scenes. producing events for other people. And it took me a while, and my guides are saying, no, you need to get out from behind. You have a message to share. You need to do this. And it took me a while to step out. And so, and selling the magazine was part of that, you know, letting go of that piece that was keeping me occupied in that direction and everything, because I need to, you know, doing the radio show, being more comfortable speaking and sharing and everything is the direction that I'm going in and what I'd like to do, because there's so, I am learning so much, and I get so excited about this. It's like, everybody needs to know this.
Yeah.
You know, this is so cool.
It's true. And, I know. I felt that way when I started going to Mile High Church there in Denver, and I started being exposed to Law of Attraction and, you know, Michael Beckwith and different speakers like that. And I felt the same way. I mean, I felt like I had a born-again experience. But, I mean, we last saw each other at the Afterlife Conference, and I wasn't able to be in your presentation. What was your topic there? And, you know, what kind of feedback did you get?
It was called Woo Woo in the World, Living a Multidimensional Life in a 3D World Reality. And that's the piece, this is the space where I've come to, and that is that there is more than we can see with our five senses and everything. And we do have guides and angels and loved ones helping us all around. And we can connect to them, and we are being guided and supported. And things are shifting. We are becoming that higher version of ourselves. But we're still kind of walking in this place of Donald Trump and all of, you know, that kind of negativity and everything. And how do we embrace that? How do we tap into that?
I know. How do we see, how do we see him as our teacher? You know, I think that's always so interesting when they say, if there's someone challenging in your life, they're your teacher. And I'm like, you know.
I watched a great video last night. I'll send it to you. It was I don't even know who this woman was, but she's a medium or whatever. And she says, well, let's figure out who's going to win the election. And she says, number one, Donald Trump is playing his role perfectly, because part of what you know, I understand now is about, we have all of this heavy, dark energy, eons worth of this stuff that we have accumulated on this planet, all the negativity, all the wars, all the anger, the hate, whatever. And all of that stuff has to come up to the surface, has to come out. All of this stuff has to come to the light. You know, we see it in more and more places. We see it in people like Bill Cosby. We see it in corporations and businesses and government. All of this stuff has to become transparent. All of this negativity has to come out in order for it to shift, so we can, you know, start moving into that higher plane of frequency where we are a kinder, gentler place. And Donald Trump is doing his job perfectly at bringing all of that out. You
sort
know,
of like
that
after the forest burns to the ground, the plants that grow back
and
the
new
is stronger.
Plants can grow up. Well, and it's, so he's bringing it all of that to the surface. Because how many people say that he says the things that, because he's rich, he can say these things that the rest of us can't. So other people are harboring these same emotions, these same fears and resentments and angers and stuff like that. Well, Donald Trump's bringing them all up.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean,
playing
stuff going back
perfectly.
All the way to the Civil War. Racism
so
and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, if you look at it that way, then we say thank you to Donald Trump. She also said that Hillary's going to win, because since 2012, we ended this 100,000-year cycle of masculine energy, and we now are in this 100,000-year cycle of feminine energy.
Mm.
And so Hillary is the bridge. She's not too feminine. You know, she's still got that establishment stuff, but she is the bridge.
Yeah, I
totally
see that.
Very good
Isn't
point.
That, I thought that was
That's fascinating.
Fascinating. Yes.
Yeah.
And so it just shifts your perspective on why all of this crap is happening, you know, and what are we supposed to do with it? And instead of getting all embroiled in it and all upset and everything, we just send light on it and allow it to, like, play out. That was one of the pieces I talked about in my speech too, is that we don't understand the big picture and how maybe things are all perfect. And one example I always like to give is, remember when Cecil, that white lion in Africa, got shot by a man from Minnesota?
Right.
And but the outpouring of love and awareness and support for animals across the planet and those organizations and that it was amazing. So on an energetic perspective, it was incredible. So imagine on the other side, when we're planning out our lives and picking out our roles and our purposes and things, this guy goes, okay, I'll be the one to shoot the lion. You know, what if that's the case? Because of the bigger picture, that positive impact that it had on the vibration of the planet.
Right. And it's not to say that all positive impacts have to come through tragedy.
Exactly.
But that through tragedy, you know, they say diamonds come from the coal being, you know, subjected to intense pressure. So what do you think, or what do you want to be your legacy?
I want to feel that I made the world a better place, that I brought light into people's lives, and my company is Bella Spark, and our tagline is igniting change, and it's all about igniting that beautiful divine spark that we all have inside of us, and whether it's, you know, just by sharing something with somebody, or, you know, it doesn't take much. You don't know how you can affect people. Smiling at somebody at the grocery store, our energy, our frequency shifts people. I want to help people find their beautiful spark and I want to leave the world a better place than it was when I got here.
I love it. That is just, I just resonate with everything you say so much. And we just want people to know how to find you and your blog. So it's DonnaVisocki.com, and it's spelled V-I-S-O-C-K-Y, DonnaVisocki.com. You can get the link there for her radio show, see what her presentations are, book her as a speaker, buy her book there. I'll meet you at the base of the mountain.
It's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And you can follow her on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. And thank you so much, Donna. We'll definitely have to have you back in St. Louis, maybe at the Center for Spiritual Living as a speaker. We would love that. And we need to be exposed to people like you as much as possible to continue to raise the vibration of the planet. So thank you so much for spending time today on Alive to Thrive. We really are grateful.
Thank you so much, Brenda. I love talking to you. This was great. And you have a blessed weekend.
I will. Thank you so much. We're going to end again with that song we opened with, Miley Cyrus, The Climb. And I encourage you to listen closely to the words, because the words are extremely powerful and can be interpreted for your life. So I was challenged to think about that song in a new way, and I thank Donna for suggesting it.
Can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaken, but I gotta keep trying. Gonna keep my head held high. There's always gonna be another mountain. I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle. chances I'm taking. Sometimes I knock me down, but